This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are live at the Pint and 109th Street and Jasper Avenue. Lots of people coming by. There's a hockey game and there's some curling going on, and we've got it all covered and some great food and beverages as well. Make sure you drop by and say hello to me. I have some tickets for the Oil Kings as well coming up in the next the Red Deer and Lethbridge games. I've got some tickets with parking passes too, which is very cool. And that and more coming up between now and 2 o'clock. In this hour, going to be talking to Oklahoma City's play-by-play guy, Jim Beyer. Their season is coming down and it's looking very close for a playoff spot. And some of those kids that they sent down to the farm out of training camp last year, like Timo Hartikainen, are really impressing, and there's a good chance we'll see them at the NHL level before the end of the year. Also, Kurt Ludeke, we'll talk to him about the Zdeno Chara incident, how that's playing in Boston, and a little bit about the 2011 draft as well. Okay, coming up at 4 o'clock today and every Thursday between 8 and 9 is the Crush Health Show, one of the most interesting shows on Team 1260 or anywhere. And the host, Jeff Crischel, joins us now. Hi, Jeff.
Alan, good. How are you today?
All right, buddy. I'm very well. Hey, I've got a few questions, so I want to get right to them. Sam Gagne, the injury there, it was first described as a short surgical surgery where doctors found no major tears. Then later we got a report about a severed tendon. So without going into specifics, because it's a little blurry here, for a skilled player like Gagne, could that kind of thing have long-term implications?
Yeah, no, I don't think it would be long-term. The one thing you got to understand, the medicine and the medical procedures that we have now are just like nothing we've ever seen in terms of sports. So in terms of return to play, even with the connective tissue, very avascular, so there's not a lot of blood supply. It could take a long time to heal. But depending exactly where it is, and if it is totally severed, I mean, they can reattach and work some magic nowadays like they've never been able to do before. Now, in terms of getting back to play, you know, the type of tendon that has been severed, that, of course, has a major implication on the return to play. You know, the Achilles tendon, for example, as you can imagine and appreciate, is a very, very severe return to play. But we've had athletes come back from totally ruptured Achilles tendons. But when it comes to, like, the fine motor movements, it can maybe have some impact on the tactile and the touch, you know, especially for a skilled player. But I don't think they're going to predict that for this one.
Okay. Mike Modano is in the Edmonton Journal today talking about he could relate to the injury. He just had it not too terribly long ago. And he said that they told him with the nerve damage and that it would be a year. But he's a 40-year-old athlete. Sam Gagne is 21. Does that recovery at a 21-year-old, that's a lot quicker, right?
Yeah, potentially can be. Now, when we talk about neural damage, that's a whole different ball of wax. There's a big difference between a severed tendon and actually nerve damage. So you know, that goes into a whole other realm. And the nervous system, you know, it's still kind of maybe like one of those uncharted territories when it comes to the human body and human physiology. We don't really know everything we need to know about it yet, but it does regenerate. We do know that. And guys have recovered. And then, Al, there's this thing called cortical mapping where, you know, if we do have problems with the nervous system, we can retrain other parts of the brain or other neural networks to take over. So all of that is entirely possible. But no question, you know, the younger you are, the quicker you recover.
Okay. Speaking of young and quick recovery, did you see that Taylor Hall video where he got into the fight?
Yes, I did.
I came out of that thinking there had to be knee ligament damage of some sort and maybe serious. Turns out he has a high ankle sprain. Is he made of rubber or is that unbelievable?
Yeah, he could be made of rubber, that's for darn sure. And again, you know, in the heat of battle, it's amazing what the body can endure. And I think that's a good example of that. And you know, when an athlete is highly trained, this is one of the reasons when we look at training an athlete, we look at the full spectrum. Flexibility is certainly one of them. Range of motion is another one. But, you know, when a guy is highly trained and tuned in, you know, little injuries like that, you can't avoid. And again, hence, kudos to the strength and conditioning program and athletic development, because you put a normal human being in there, they'd probably be out and down for the count.
Okay. And it turned him into a high ankle sprain, which is a nightmare unto itself, right?
Yeah, it can be. Again, depending on the severity and exactly what's been affected, ankle sprains, especially for a skating athlete. And again, you're just looking at that time to heal. There is no fast-tracking the healing time of the body. You know, if you maximize nutrition, you maximize the rehab, and of course, the Oilers have one of the best medical teams in the league, no question about it. So we'll expect that he's either going to be right on course or ahead of schedule in the terms of return to play.
They said 8 weeks, which would put him in and around the World Hockey Championships. Is that reasonable for us to at least expect that might be possible?
Yeah, in terms of return to play, yeah, for sure. And again, depending on how severe it actually was, and again, everybody's different, right? It's so individualistic. and there's so many factors involved. But, you know, typically 6 to 8 weeks, you can have an athlete, a fine-tuned athlete back, potentially even before then. But I'm sure they're in no rush here looking at the situation. And this is not something I don't think you'd ever want to rush anyway. So I think they got a beautiful time frame to work with.
I was at the Bruins-Oilers game a couple of weeks ago at Rexall, and Theo Peckham fought, I think it was Nathan Horton, didn't return to the game. He's listed as out day-to-day with a concussion. There's really been no information, which is maybe good. Can you take me through the process a professional athlete has to go through when he's concussed?
Yeah, well, you know, and things are rapidly changing, Al, as you can appreciate. We're, you know, there's a big conversation going on in the sports world of, you know, whether there's actually more concussions right now or actually whether we're more aware of exactly what they are, the symptoms, and we're assessing them better. But regardless, the return-to-play protocols are getting very sophisticated, and it's the best thing we've ever seen for the athletes. And, you know, when you do have some form of minor brain trauma or brain injury or concussion, you know, we're trying to get away from that concussion because it can be misleading as to the symptoms and the type of injury that happens to the brain. So we like to talk about these mild traumatic brain injuries sort of scenarios. And, you know, depending on the level, you will sort of determine the return to play. But regardless of what the symptoms are, if you have had symptoms, and there's a whole list that we would take an athlete through, you know, and if they show signs of a combination of those symptoms, they are out. One and done is sort of the rule right now, Alan. So once an athlete has been assessed with an athlete, they are out of competition. Now, they have to be, typically the way we like to do it is they have to be 24 hours symptom-free before they start a return-to-play program. And, of course, that return-to-play program will be vastly determined by the length of time they've been out of competition.
So would a team have a baseline from spring training or training camp, and the individual would have to pass whatever that is before getting back into the process of getting ready to play?
Yeah, really, really great question. And what's happening now is, you know, athletes that have had previous concussions, they're constantly getting assessed and analyzed by the medical training staff and the doctors on the teams. And this is regardless of the sport. And, Al, this is something we should also really be thinking about at the developmental levels. The great thing about being in these pro guys, they have all these medical experts around them to keep them safe and make sure everything's on track. In the developmental levels, we don't have this, but we can really learn a lot from this. So what they do is they take either a SCAT-2 form, which is a concussion assessment tool, the number 2 form that's been modified. That's the one that's typically being used in sports right now. And it just takes the athletes through a questionnaire, and it takes them through symptoms and really gets a good depiction of their state of health. We like to do this before the season starts, and especially with athletes who had concussions or head injuries before. And then we get a baseline of, you know, their state or their present fitness. Now, when we think they may have had a concussion or a brain injury, or whether they've been in a collision, a lot of times athletes don't even know if they've had a concussion because they don't know what the symptoms are. And on the other side, a lot of times the symptoms don't always show themselves clearly. So anytime we see an athlete who may have been in a collision or in a high-impact situation, we'll reassess them compared to the baseline. And if there's any type of deviation, we'll get a pretty good read as to whether there's been some form of head trauma there. So it's a really good question, and it's something we should be doing with all of our athletes, especially at the developmental levels.
This is Nation Radio. We're live at the Pine 109th and Jasper on Edmonton Sports Radio Team 1260. It's Alan Mitchell in conversation with Jeff Crichel. Jeff, you know, a few years ago, I think it was like December of 09, I read an article about an old-timey hockey player I remember as a kid, played in the WHA, named Reg Fleming, and he had donated his brain to, I think, the Boston University. They did a study in July, and it was released around Christmas of 09, and it talked about the tremendous degenerative disease known as I can't even pronounce it here. It's encephalopathy. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty close. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. And, you know, hey, Alan, you know, we can look at the Chris Benoit story. We can look at the studies they've done on the NFL players who have passed away and donated their brains and their bodies to science. And we've seen, you know, incredibly accelerated degenerative diseases. You know, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, all these types of neurological diseases that you might, you know, typically sort of correlate with old age. We're seeing in these athletes who die at 50 or 60 years old, and it's a real, real concerning problem. And, you know, when an athlete, and this is one of the reasons we have to be very conscious of athletes who are experiencing head traumas, because here it is, it's a cumulative effect, which is something a lot of people don't realize. You know, the second impact is incredible. It has a much higher potential for damage than the first one, the third one potentially higher. and then the fourth one down the road. So, you know, the cumulative effect in terms of head injuries, it packs on and it can grow in exponential rates depending on the particular athlete, but not a very uncommon thing when we look at the accelerated brain degeneration with you know, boxing athletes, the football athletes, and certainly the hockey guys.
So the NHL is meeting on Monday, starting on Monday, the big leagues are meeting on this subject. What ideally would we look for them to come out of that meeting with?
Well, you know what, the NFL, and this is going to be interesting, they're going to have to kind of do something, but here's my question right back to you. I hate to answer a question with a question, but to open this for discussion, what can they do? We know that these athletes are bigger, they're faster, they're stronger. We had a talk recently with the chief medical officer for the NFL Players Association. Of course, the NFL is facing very, very similar things, and they've had some major congresses. I hope the NHL really sort of latches on or tag teams or uses the NFL as a reference point or as a partner in this whole thing, because the sports have a lot in common when it comes to head injuries. But in the NFL, they're doing some pretty unique things. They've looked to the military, for example, and what they're doing now is they're getting the teams to work out a buddy system with their players. So in the Navy, in the Army, what they do is you have a buddy, one of the soldiers in your unit, and you guys sort of keep track of each other. They're going to start implementing that in the NFL now, where you're going to be matching the player on your unit or your line, certainly on your team, and then you're going to sort of keep track of each other. If the guy isn't acting properly, it's going to be up to the buddy to either, you know, go talk to him or make to the trainers and the coaches aware of what's going on. So I think that's one thing they can do. But then I think, you know, in the NFL, they're talking about it as well. There has to be an incredibly harsh discipline. The problem there is, how do you define the issue? I mean, we could look at what happened last week in the NHL, and was that intentional? Was it not intentional? How do you discipline that? Or whether it's intentional or not, if it's an out-of-control situation, I think you got to pay the price.
I think it's funny you mentioned the Chara thing, because I had my own opinion on it. I thought, you know what, clearly he deserved to get a penalty. I thought that the kicking him out of the game was enough. Others wanted a suspension, but that he'd done something illegally. But I talked to somebody who played at a high level, but not in the National Hockey League, and he had an interesting take. He said, at some point, it's almost the responsibility of the athlete, who in this case was Pacioretty, who got hurt, to realize that the situation is not going his way and to back off. And I said, can he think that quickly? And the answer from the individual was yes. Do you think it's fair to say that sometimes, not necessarily Pacioretty, but sometimes these guys put themselves in a position where they are really not putting themselves in a good situation?
Yeah, and again, great point, very strong point. It's something that we've talked about quite a bit. And if you look at the type of player they are, you have those hard-hitting players. Of course, they're going to be in there grinding away. They're not going to give an inch. They just aren't going to give an inch in competition. So I don't know if it's realistic to expect guys to give an inch, but I will say this. In a dangerous situation, these guys have been on the ice or in the game long enough to know when somebody could potentially get hurt. And that's where we just have to be incredibly aware and disciplined and being consistent with enforcing these, you know, roughing rules or, you know, whatever they're going to call it. But it just has to be a consistent approach.
I think what the NHL is going to have to do eventually, and I don't know how many years it's going to take, is outlaw headshots and fighting. Do you think there's the appetite for that?
Yeah, I think there is. And I think there's a growing appetite, especially now the way the game is going so fast. The guys are so strong. Guys are getting hurt more simply because of that reason. And so the game is going to have to evolve with the athletes. There's no way around it.
What about equipment? Because I know that the shoulder pads are often, because of the difference in height, they often end up being the item that really does the damage.
Yeah, no question, and that's true. And they also, on the other side, they're built for protection, not to elicit a damage response or damage, right? So again, that's a double-edged sword as well. But you know, one thing that's really coming along is the helmet technology. And you know, in terms of concussions, can they you know, have an impact on decreasing the risk of the concussion or hand injuries? Well, when you're going fisticuffs, you know, head on. The pile driver, haymakers coming at you. There's no helmet in the world that's going to help you. So, you know, there's a lot of issues involved here, and it's a delicate thing. You don't want to take away from the game, but at the same time, you have to provide a safe environment, a playing environment for the athletes. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they proceed here.
I imagine somebody driving their kid to a hockey game right now, and we're scaring the hell out of them. So let's talk about what a parent can do for a child who is in hockey right now, and there is physical contact. What's the procedure? What's the best thing for them to do?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, one of the things that we're really encouraging, and it's happening across the board, across Canada, is we're really making sure that somebody on the team does have a background or at least is educated slightly on the head injury concussion side. Not all of these teams have trainers. There's not medical staff down at the arena, so you know somebody on the team has to be responsible for that. But you know what? The kids just have to be aware. And in the developmental levels, maybe there's even more potential for injury simply because they're a little more out of control. They don't have the finesse. They don't have the skill or the strength sometimes to handle their body weight at those high speeds. And again, the risk of injury goes up. So awareness is the key. The kids just got to be aware. And, you know, you have to be aware of the situation you're in, just like we talked about with the pro guys. If you think you're in a dangerous situation, well, you probably are, and you got to be on your toes and ahead of that. That's sort of those one of those intangible things that's tough to say, you know, on the radio and then to make it happen on the ice. But as long as the kids are thinking about it and they're aware of it, I think that's a big step forward.
Yeah, we're making progress. I mean, when I was a kid, you wore bone skates, and if you got hit in the head,
exactly.
They'd laugh at you. They'd say, oh, you got your bell rung. Get out there. You know, there was it was sort of a man-up thing, right?
Yeah.
And at least we're getting away from that when we realize that there's some long-term implications, and I think the Probert, and now with what's happening with Sidney Crosby, I think that's what happens with someone like Crosby who's not getting better? I think of Adam Deadmarsh, who came back early years ago, and then he got into a fight. He was challenged to a fight, and he fought. And it took him years, Jeff, to recover, and his life was never the same.
Yeah, and I think Sidney Crosby may be one of the powerful spokespeople for this. And, of course, he's raised the awareness. And despite all the bad for Sidney Crosby, this could be something that's really important for the game in terms of, you know, moving it forward. But you cannot rush Sidney Crosby. There is no way you bring this kid back until he has met the guidelines and he's comfortable. And again, you know, if you heard the interviews when it first happened, he was confused. He could not verbalize or describe the feelings he was having. He was just off. I think that's how he said, I just feel off. I can't explain it, right?
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of athletes experience. It's not necessarily a headache or a pounding headache or blurred vision. Sometimes it's this very elusive feeling that you're just not quite all there. But again, Al, you cannot return to play until you've been 24 hours symptoms free.
Yeah.
And I don't know when it's going to happen for Sidney Crosby, but you know, hopefully one day. Some of the athletes that we've worked with, you know, they wake up and they go, whoa, Eureka, I feel like $1 million. It's like a flick of the switch. Some guys, you know, over the course of 3 days, they feel like $1 million, and it's like this big sigh of relief, big load off their shoulders. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for Sidney for sure, but this is not something to be rushed along. There's no two ways about it.
Off subject a little bit, this is via email for you, Jeff. What is the evidence that regular aerobic exercise and weight training can actually make old guys like this individual, over 50, physically younger?
Oh, no question. Well, there's a lot of science on the fountain of youth. And if you're really going to ask me where the fountain of youth will be found, it's in the weight room, no question about it. Resistance training. And it all has to do with the hormones. Anytime you get into the weight room or if you do an aerobic workout that pushes the body above its resting level, you're going to have a hormone response. Anytime you damage tissue or stress the body out, it responds by releasing hormones, growth hormone, testosterone, to repair damage. And that's why typically, you know, athletes look younger. If they train properly, they'll look younger, they'll feel younger, because their hormone levels are elevated, higher than the average person. So no question about that whatsoever. And, you know, one thing we really, really encourage people to do is get with a certified trainer, NSCA, a certified strength and conditioning coach who has a degree in the sports science, and get into a real good program. You know, it's not about lifting weights necessarily. We could do it with body weight exercises, but there's absolutely no question if it's done properly, it could be, you know, not even a quote, but it could mimic the fountain of youth, so to speak.
Beautiful. See, I always learn something when I talk to you. Two quick ones. How do the Blue Jays look this year?
The Blue Jays are looking better than they have in a long time. It's simply because I think they've got some balance, and not just that, but a real plan moving forward. Now, if you look at the AL East, impossible. Look at Boston, look at New York, so they're up against it. Tampa's not going to be bad either. But, I mean, that's the best division to watch in baseball. But you know, talking to the Blue Jays, they're looking really good. But, man, you've got to look at that Phillies starting rotation,
yeah.
And it'll just drive you nuts. If you're a drinking man, watch out, because, holy cow, if you're not cheering for the Phillies, it's going to be a long, hard season.
What about that kid from the Nationals with the golden arm and then it fell apart? Is he going to be back?
Well, the talk is he's going to be back. And, you know, one thing we were worried about with that kid is, you know, just how hard he was throwing. You know,
Yeah. It's
one thing to be in the minor leagues or come up through college, you know, throw a couple times a week and, you know, have the short seasons. But when you're in a 162-game schedule, potentially throwing every 5 days with your bullpens in between, playing catcher, it's a whole different animal. And even though they had a really good strategic plan for monitoring and you know, managing his arm, because he throws over 100 miles an hour when he wants to, I still think they should have cut it back to velocity. This is just my personal opinion,
Yeah. And
I think that's what they'll do going forward. But, again, it would be great to see him back on the mound this year for sure.
Jeff Grischel, thanks so much for this.
You got it. I'll talk to you soon.
You're on at 4 o'clock today, right?
4 o'clock, yep.
What's on the show?
Well, hey, we're talking about winter sports. We're looking at did the money from the Own the Podium and the support of the athletes going into the Olympics carry over to the World Cup this year? And we're also talking about the incredible event out at Jasper and Marmot Base in World Junior National Freestyle Competition is on out there, and it's the next generation of Olympic athletes.
Jeff, thanks so much.
All right, Al.
Jeff Grischel, very interesting guy. You can catch him on Crush Health, and he also does some dynamite vignettes on Team 1260, and he's an industry unto his own. He is a very smart man, and we appreciate his time. It's 1:21. This is Nation Radio on Team 1260 Radio, Edmonton Sports Radio. We're at the Pint, 109th and Jasper until 2 o'clock today. On the way, Kirk Ludeke from Bruins Draft Watch.